Welcome to the first of many episodes of Historical Horrors. My name is Christy Clark, and thank you so much for tuning in. This podcast is a love child between my love of paranormal and my love for history. I am currently a history major at the University of Idaho. I also love the paranormal. I love horror movies, I love creepy stories, and I love when horror meets history, which is exactly what this is. Now, I have a lot of local stories. I kind of want to keep it local before branching out because I think small town horror is really, it's underrated. No one really talks about it. Do you know the haunted buildings in your town? No? Well, if you live in the Pacific Northwest, I might be able to shed some light on some of those historical and haunted buildings. So the first building that I'm going to be talking about is extremely close to me. It is on my campus. Like I said, I go to the University of Idaho, and this first story is about Reidenbaugh Hall. Reidenbaugh Hall is in the heart of campus. There are several main buildings that were some of the first buildings built on campus that are all right next to each other. For example, the administration building, the Nichols building, and Reidenbaugh Hall are literally all right next to each other. My campus is pretty old, so of course it has some kind of paranormal association to it. The University of Idaho was actually built in 1889, and Reidenbaugh Hall, which is the building that we're discussing this episode, is the oldest standing building on campus. There was a building that was older than Reidenbaugh. There was actually quite a few that were older than Reidenbaugh, but they were torn down either because they were unsafe to be in, or they burned down, like our first administration building that burnt down in 1906. So Reidenbaugh was built in 1902, which makes it the oldest standing building. Even though it's a tiny, tiny little town, the campus master plan was designed by the Olmsted brothers, which are the same people who are responsible for doing the master plans of Central Park in New York. They also did other campuses like Stanford and Cornell. Like, the University of Idaho was supposed to be a big deal, and it never really made its mark, which is fine. Like, the University of Idaho is incredible, and I'm so happy that I'm here. I study European history, so a really fun fact for me, maybe not for you, is that the new administration building was built in 1909 in the Tudor Gothic style, which I love studying the Tudor family. So it pretty much looks like a little tiny mini Hampton Court. It is a stunning campus. The building was intended to be a women's dormitory, but its purpose kind of had to switch throughout the years. The building was only a women's dormitory from 1901 to 1925, then it became a men's dormitory, then the hall switched to being music practice rooms, different things that the university needed. It's been a very flexible building. Reidenbaugh Hall is actually a historic building. It was registered as a historic place in 1977, and the building is still in use by the University of Idaho. The first floor of the building is currently being used as the Art and Architecture Program's art gallery. The second floor of the building was actually shut down for a while. I dug up an old article from the Argonaut, which is the school's newspaper, student-led newspaper, and the whole second floor was closed off to faculty and students in 2013. It is currently open now in 2019, so I'm not really sure. I think I remember reading that there was something to do with safety concerns, which it is an old building, so it makes sense. The third floor of the building is currently being used as a practice room area for students at the Lionel Hampton School of Music, which is also at the University of Idaho, just has a fancy name. Now, like I said, the university has some history. It is a very old university. It's the first university in Idaho. It officially opened in 1892 in October, so we're getting pretty close to its anniversary, and it only had 2 faculty members and 40 students. So the school didn't provide student housing at first, which is kind of why they needed to start thinking about residence halls. So all of the students had to live in the community of Moscow, where they rented rooms and apartments. And it worked well for male students, but there was a major concern for female students, particularly about they're like parents. The parents were really concerned for their daughters going off to college and having to walk all the way across town. In the winter here, it gets dark at like 4 o'clock. So there were safety concerns. Oh, and also parents really didn't like the idea that their daughters were living unsupervised because, you know, it was the times. Women can't be unsupervised. They always have to have a male family member around, right? I actually found, during my research, a picture of Reidenbaugh Hall from 1910, and the caption says, 1910 photograph of Reidenbaugh Hall, then a dormitory for women, according to a noticeably sarcastic account in an early edition of the Argonaut, the student newspaper. The inmates of Reidenbaugh are enjoined from loitering on campus with any young man on weekdays. So, you know, the women felt like prisoners because they kind of were, in a sense. We're not going to get into it, but that's why they really needed to build Reidenbaugh Hall, because they needed a women's dormitory on campus. You know, it might be a coincidence, but the home economics building, the Nichols building, is literally right next door. But I kind of don't think it's a coincidence. Like, I want to think that it's a coincidence so that it's not like something that's pretty sexist, that, you know, women can only do home economics and teaching. But it's fine. It's a coincidence. It's a coincidence. Just remind yourself. It's fine. Don't think too deep. Back to the spooky stuff. Not that sexism isn't spooky, but back to the paranormal. So some of the stories that are circulating around Reidenbaugh Hall is that a student allegedly hung herself in room 225. But that story is kind of really common on campus. I don't know if there's like any building other than like the actual teaching buildings that don't have that rumor. Like, I know there's a rumor about someone committing suicide in Brink, Reidenbaugh, the Tower, Wallace, any of the residence halls, pretty much. Anywhere a student can live, there is a rumor of a death. There have also been reports of changes in temperature when you're in the building, pianos playing in the vents, which it is a music practice area, so like, but those reports come from when people are alone, they'll hear it, and then they'll go investigate, and they're like, I'm alone in this building, why is there piano music playing throughout the vents? There's also door slamming, like one student was practicing in his music room, and the door opened, and he was like, okay, well, like, I'm gonna go see who that was, and he goes out and checks, and there's no one in the hallway, so the door just opened by itself. There's also reports of hearing singing and shadow people, which shadow people kind of freak me out because I've always, if I've ever experienced that, it's always been in a negative sense, and I don't think shadow people are good ghosts. I think that they're usually negative. I don't know. Maybe one will prove me wrong one day. We'll see. And finally, the meat of the story, probably one of the coolest things that I found out about the University of Idaho, paranormal-wise, is that Ed and Lorraine Warren were on our campus and investigated different buildings on campus. Like, the Ed and Lorraine Warren, if you don't know who they are, if you've seen The Conjuring, that movie's about them, so that's the psychic medium and her husband, Ed and Lorraine. I think that that's amazing. I never thought that this small town would ever have people of that significance here. Also, this information was so hard to find. I messaged paranormal groups, the Moscow one. Apparently, there's a paranormal society in Moscow. I messaged them and I was like, do you guys have any information on this? I can't find articles. I can't find anything in traditional newspapers. But the Argonaut pulled through and I was able to find a news article written. When was it? It does not say here, but I do know that the year that all of this occurred was 1992. So it was probably written in 1992 if I had to take a stab at it. So the article reads, for 43 years, Ed and Lorraine Warren have investigated ghosts, demons, spirits, and other supernatural occurrences around the world. This weekend, the Warrens investigated the university campus. Lorraine Warren is a light trance medium, able to detect spirits visually and through sound. She said her clairvoyance developed in a natural way when she was younger. Ed Warren grew up in a haunted house, which explains his interest in ghosts. Ed is a religious demonologist. I'm going to take that as a sign to stop reading this article. I wasn't going to read the whole thing anyway, but I wanted to get through that sentence. So he's a religious demonologist. who studies demons and deals with them through religion and belief in God. You see that in the Conjuring movies. You also see Ed and Lorraine Warren going to college campuses and making these kind of presentations. Now, in the film, I assumed that, like, they just taught a class at a university as, like, a side gig. But no, they toured and they went to all different types of universities in different states and investigated buildings. It was kind of just like a national tour, essentially. And if you remember in the first Conjuring movie, there was the scene where he makes a total dad joke. Ed Warren makes a total dad joke. Something about seeing ghosts and how everyone thinks that they're like crack jobs or something. You know the scene I'm talking about. He's talking in front of the class and then Lorraine chimes in too. Well, there's a dad joke in this article that maybe he just repeats it to everyone ever. When we talk to God, they call it praying. What do they call it when God talks to us? Schizophrenia. I understand that that's not a funny joke. I'm not saying that it is funny. It just is weird that, like, the Conjuring movie essentially happened at the University of Idaho. At least that part, the college tour part, happened. And it's just weird to think about that I've sat here in the building and I've been to some of these buildings that they investigated and never knew. Anywho, they investigated three buildings while they were on campus. Brink Hall, Reidenbaugh Hall, and Kappa Sigma Fraternity. So the first tour was at Brink, and they didn't really find much, so they kind of just meandered over to Reidenbaugh Hall, where they found way more. Lorraine claims that she saw a young girl, student age, probably in her early 20s, but she was wearing clothes from the 1930s, and her hair was pulled back in a bun. That's really all that they got from Reidenbaugh, which is a little bit disappointing, but they got a lot more at Kappa Sigma, which is actually a really cool story. And I did talk to a Kappa Sigma and I asked him, I'm like, did you know that this happened, that they came to your house? And he was like, no, but I do know that we have a ghost named Glenn, which is true. And Lorraine did talk about Glenn in this article. So he's around, K-Sig. You got a ghost in your house, but you have something else too. So the article actually writes about this guy. His name's Glenn. The article is just a photocopy, so it's really hard to see. I cannot make out his last name. I think it's like Glenn Holm, but he was a member of Kappa Sigma in the early 1950s. He came from a divorced family, and the fraternity was really the only place he ever felt at home. So when he passed from a car crash over Christmas break, people believe that his spirit went back to K-Sig, which I guess is true because people have confirmed that they are aware of Glenn's presence. So after the initial walkthrough that Ed and Lorraine did, they wanted to come back later that night with a group of students who are more sensitive to spirits. So they brought a group back to K-Sig that night to do a discernment of spirits to try and contact Glenn and see how he's doing. Now, the Warrens had requirements for these sensitive students that they brought. Some of the requirements are that they had to have a great belief in God to ensure that if anything did happen, that they would be protected by God. So they took 16 people into the basement of Kappa Sigma, and everyone else was instructed to stay in the living room. They turned off the lights, and Ed told the group to be aware of their body in case if a spirit tried to enter their body, they could, like, figure it out. So he warned them about any numbnesses in their arms or legs or sleepiness, that is a sign, and that if anything did happen, the person was to make a sign of the cross and say, in the name of Jesus Christ, leave me. So Lorraine started feeling this pull from the picture of Glenn, and the woman next to her, she was wearing a St. Christopher medallion, like a medal, and she felt that it was, like, pulsating. And Lorraine was like, okay, what you're feeling is real. And then all of a sudden, the woman across the room started breathing, like, really heavily, almost like she was hyperventilating, and she was complaining that her legs and her arms are feeling heavy, and Ed had to, like, do his thing, you know, being the religious demonologist, and the woman talked and it wasn't her voice, and it said, "I know no name." So Ed probably did the very generic, the tell me your name, almost like in the second Conjuring movie, where they were trying to figure out Felix's name. They eventually did find it out. Spoiler alert. Sorry, that movie's old, so if you haven't seen it, sorry. So they turned back on the lights and calmed everyone down, and they sent the woman away, and then the rest of the group continued. And Lorraine was like, this isn't good. Like, whatever is in here is evil, and they had to leave. And the Warrens instructed the Kappa Sigmas to have a cross hung at all times in that room. Well, when I talked to the Kappa Sigma about the ghost and the Warrens, I was like, did you know that they said that you guys have to keep a cross in that room at all times? And he's like, oh, no, but like, that's definitely not there anymore. And I'm like, you dum-dums, even if you don't believe in that stuff, like if someone's like, there's something bad in your house, put this up just as a means of protection. Like, maybe you should do it. You know, that's like my thoughts and feelings. Eh, but what can you do? We all make mistakes. We all, you know, don't listen to demonologists. It's fine, right? Well, that's all that I have for today's episode. I know it was kind of a short one, but I just really wanted to do this story because it is so close to home. And I think it's very fascinating that it's a part of UI's history now. Thank you so much for listening. You can find me on different social media platforms. I have a Facebook page set up for this podcast. You can find that page at Historical Horrors. I also have an Instagram and a Twitter set up for this podcast, and you can find both of those at Historical HPod. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to send me any form of creepy story or personal story or a haunted house that you would like to hear me talk about or research, just send me a message through one of those platforms and I'd be happy to look into it and read your stories. Thank you again for listening, and I'll catch you in the next one. Bye.